Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 334, recorded on June 9th, 2017. Enjoy! Alright, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey Jeff, how you doing?
I'm pretty awesome, how are you?
I'm doing well. And Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast. Hey Adam, how are you doing?
I am doing just fine, Michael. Thank you for asking.
You're welcome.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. So WWDC, I think, is concluding as we speak. They're probably doing their beer bash, right? I'm sure they still do that.
Yeah. Did they do the beer bash on the last day? They did something earlier in the week.
I'm not sure. But today's the last day of the conference. Yeah. They had the big keynote on Monday. They had all the big sessions and all the fun stuff, but we got to hear about the big announcements on Monday, and in no particular order, I suppose. The first thing, which was not unexpected, is that Amazon Prime Video is coming to the Apple TV later this year. Apple confirmed that for us, kind of right off the bat, which is nice.
Yay.
And
this makes me very happy.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
It makes me happy too, but man, it should have been done a long time ago.
Well, I guess, yeah. Whatever. We get it now.
Whatever backroom things they had to do.
Soon.
We get it soon. We get it someday, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazon, they should have really had everything in place so that Apple on Monday, when they announced the Amazon Prime thing, they would have said, and it's available today.
They don't play by Apple's schedule.
Bezos wants to, you know, so it's like, how hard could it be to like adapt that into a TV app?
It's a power play. I'm going to go with
that. Yeah, I don't think it's hard at all.
Power play.
From their perspective, you know, generally speaking.
You know, maybe they're short on developers over there at Amazon.
I think this is a pissing match.
Yeah, it really does seem like that.
It's like one guy. They have one guy. He's like, you're the Apple TV guy. Ah, dang it.
That's crap. You're going to make me write some stupid app that you're not going to get around to putting on the TV. I hate you.
Yeah, that's how it went down.
He probably wrote the app in 3 days and has just been, like playing games on his computer.
He's been playing
for the last 18 months.
He's been playing the Chrome no
Chip
Wi-Fi.
Chip Ravens, the app. Programmer.
No, he's been playing the there's no Wi-Fi signal game in your Chrome browser. The little dino jumper for the last 18 months. Which is the only thing I'm jealous of Chrome users. That's the only thing I wish I had in Safari. Come on, Apple, get it together. We need a line jumper game. What is that called? Whatever that is, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, let's move on.
The little dinosaur game that you can play in the controls in the notification center or in today. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I have no idea what that is.
You're thinking of Steve.
Steve, yeah.
Oh, okay. You'll have to tell me more about that later. WatchOS 4. Not a lot of big stuff. What's the guy's name? The guy that came over from Palm, right? Did he come over from Palm? The guy that Apple brought over to spearhead the watch. He looked a little like he had just crawled
That's
out of his...
Kevin Lynch, and he's from Adobe.
Thank you. Get my wires crossed. But yeah, Kevin Lynch Palm looked like Adobe. He just kind of crawled out of a development cave to bring us a kaleidoscope watch face.
Ugh.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how the Siri watch face actually works.
I think
that's going to be amazing.
I have little faith in that Siri watch face, but I'm looking forward to it. You know,
It's got amazing AI behind it.
Amazing
it's
AI.
It's going to give you everything you need when you need it.
I detect a bit of sarcasm in your voice.
No.
No, not at all. For me, no.
In reality, I am cautiously optimistic.
I suppose I am
the
too.
Demo, it gave great demo.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
And if it works half as good as the demo showed, it's going to be pretty cool, actually.
I think so, too. Yeah, honestly, there's only so much information you can cram onto a watch face. And things like upcoming calendar events, reminders, you know, time sensitive or location sensitive things, I think that Apple has proven to be able to do well, and using Siri for that, I think it'll
work out
well.
I hope the types of data, the one thing I'm hoping for is that the types of data that you get in the little Siri stream or whatever you call it when you roll up on the crown, that's somewhat controllable, because like I'd have very little interest in the whole moments thing on my watch. Like I don't care about that. Like I don't need that in that little scrolly list.
Yeah.
You know, so okay. If you can't make it a little less useful, because it'll be like, here's some moments from a year ago. It's like, I don't need that on my watch. I like it on my computer. I like the feature. I'm not bashing the feature. I'm just saying on my watch, I'm not really interested in it.
Yeah. You also got Toy Story watch faces.
Those are fun.
I don't use them. Yep. I use the analog watch face.
Yeah, I customize my own Mickey? Analog watch face.
You customize your analog?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that one the best. So I'm not a big fan of the Talking Mickey. I know there are definitely people who enjoy it. You know, those fun things. And I honestly wish that the astronomy watch face provided more detail, because I would totally have the solar system there all the time.
That would be cool.
And it's, you know,
you mean more detail in terms of offered more complications.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, it offers a lot of detail. The planetary alignment is accurate, and you can scroll through it. Actually, that's the only watch face you can still do your time changing on, your time machine or whatever they called it. They also added support for high intensity interval training workouts and gym equipment data exchange that'll come to updated gym equipment in the future. So mm-hmm. That's future times. And a better music app, which I think is primarily based upon auto syncing of playlists and that sort of thing. So you'll just always have updated music on your watch. The one thing I was hoping for was the announcement that they would put Beats 1 shows, you know, time shifted Beats 1 shows on the watch, because as it stands right now, you can't save those at all. And I really like those mixes, you know, from Diplo's show,
Major Lazer.
Thank you. I was going to say Mad Decent, but that's not it. Yeah. Major Lazer, A-Trax show. I mean, there are a bunch of good shows. I really like the selection. We've been over all this, but yeah. Auto syncing, so you don't necessarily have to bring your phone when you're doing your workouts. So that's cool. Other than that, yep. I'm guessing it's a lot of tweaks, refinements, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I do like some of the interface things that they showed off, like apps as a list as opposed to the bubble cluster.
Oh wait, what?
You hadn't seen that yet?
Wait, what? No, what? No, I didn't see that.
So it's a setting. The default is you see the apps on the watch as the bubble cluster that we currently have.
Yeah.
But you can change it so it's just a scrollable list. So you actually have an icon that's more easy to identify plus an app name.
No way.
Way.
I like you. So 9to5Mac calls it Honeycomb. I like Bubble Cluster.
Honeycomb, that's a crap name.
Bubble Cluster. Bubble Cluster. Wow, that's, I don't know that I'm going to change from the Bubble Cluster. I've gotten used to it.
What did Apple officially call it?
They call it Grid View. It's Grid View and List View.
It's Grid View.
When they showed off the watch app bubble thing, I thought they had a name for it.
Well, it's now they're calling it Grid View.
Yeah, the preference actually does say Grid View.
Yeah.
But that's a grid if you have a really bad astigmatism and are drinking when you put that grid together. It's a bubble cluster.
It's not a grid in Euclidean geometry, I'd say.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Or at the very least it's in Euclidean geometry, but it's not a rectangular coordinate system. We'll go with that.
Bubble cluster.
We'll do bubble cluster. So
you can get the Pride Edition watch band now, by the way.
Yeah. New watch bands.
I'm thinking about buying one of those.
It's a six color watch band. I mean, the Pride thing's great and everything too, but I more want it because I'm a retro Apple nerd.
Totally. Yeah. Where are they? Where do you find them?
Right on Apple's
Watch website. If you go to the Apple Watch page.
Click bands, I'm guessing.
And look at bands, you scroll partway down the page, and it's actually by itself.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's
They wanted to make sure that really stood out.
Yeah. It does look very retro Apple.
Could also be called the Mork Suspender Edition.
Oh, no. As if I didn't want to just go up and buy that one already. Well, now it's cinched. I think I'm just going to have to get that band.
Yeah, so iOS 11 got a crap ton of love. Before we do that, I want to mention the iMac Pro.
Oh.
Because that was a surprise for everybody. For the most part, and it's not coming out until December.
It wasn't a surprise that it was coming. It was a surprise that they showed it off at WWDC.
We knew something was coming later this year.
We were expecting a more powerful iMac, right? That was pretty much what Apple told us. We weren't sure about the timeline.
With features for pro users.
We weren't sure about the specifics, and I think we were blown away by everything, honestly. Because you can get up to 18 cores in that bad boy. What is it? 128 gigs of RAM?
128 gigs of RAM. And is it a 2 or 3 terabyte hard drive? I don't remember. Or SSD. I don't remember.
Up to 2 terabytes.
There you go.
And a graphics card that everybody applauded, even though it doesn't exist yet. Right?
Yes.
It's a new one from
the AMD Vega series.
AMD Vega. Yeah. So it's if you look at the website for
the price?
$5,000.
$12,000.
Wait, is it $4,000 or $5,000?
It's $5,000 for the base model. But if you want it maxed out with 2 terabytes and 128 gigs of RAM and a 2 terabyte SSD and the top of the line
that 18 Radeon core card processor.
It's going to be north of $10,000.
Well, to be fair, they did do the comparison. So this baseline spec, so it's 5K display, 8 core CPU, 32 gigs RAM, 128 terabytes SSD, the Vega GPU.
128? Did you say 128 is the base spec?
32 gigs RAM.
No, 128.
1 terabyte SSD. 1 terabyte.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait a minute. Okay. That's 1 terabyte SSD.
1080p, FaceTime camera, blah, 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 blah. All that. And you got your 4 Thunderbolt 3 USB-Cs.
First Mac with a 1080p FaceTime camera, by the way.
Yeah. How about that?
Oh, I had missed that. Wow, yeah.
3.5mm headphone jack, SD card slot, thank God. So the baseline spec...
Oh, and 10 gigabit Ethernet, which is new.
They compared that base spec to a similarly configured Dell, right? I think it was a Dell. a Dell workstation. PCs. And it was, what, $1,000 or $2,000 cheaper, something like that.
$2,000 less.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty exceptional. So it'll be interesting to see the types of pros that get this.
I think they said it could drive three...
It can drive, yes, you're right, three 5K displays.
5K displays. If you that's including the built-in one before people...
Right. So two external displays.
So two extra 5K displays.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of developers, well, a lot of pro users that are going to look at this and think, okay, here's the pro machine. I just order it. I put it on the desk and I go. And that's what they want.
I look at it this way. This is the upgrade to the trash can Mac Pro in an iMac.
Yeah, it's kind of like if they had Netflix and Chill Night, and 9 months later, here you go.
Because it has the same philosophy, right? That's the philosophy that they're moving away from, hopefully, with the Pro, which is this is you buy it as configured and you don't mess with it.
Yeah, so as far as upgradability, it's...
not.
Well, not user serviceable. Jeff and I were chatting about this. As far as we can tell, based on the images on the site and paired with the information from iFixit tearing down the latest 5K iMac, it looks like the RAM is not soldered on, and the actual CPU is not soldered on, probably. Very, very likely not if we use the current 5K
Apple said
iMac.
The RAM was not upgradable.
It's not, but because there's no trap door, right? And so
on the board there's still a slot and it's not soldered on.
Correct. If you look at the images on their site, that is what is depicted. And so it requires, I'm guessing, as the current 5K does, a little pizza cutter, a pizza wheel to pull the display off. But, you know, if you're a pro, five years down the road, you want to upgrade some stuff, you can do that.
You know, that's really not what people are going to do.
I don't think it is either.
There will be a handful of people that do that, but most people that buy these, just like any other iMac, they buy it and that's it. However it came out of the box, they just roll with it.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so there was that. Oh, yeah, eGPUs in High Sierra. I know this is the iOS show. I know it is, but I'm a big fan of eGPUs, and Apple is officially supporting eGPUs. They're rolling that into High Sierra. There's a developer kit. And
Apple developer kit's a good bargain, man.
What is it, $300?
No, it's $600, but you get the Sonnet enclosure, you get a high-end AMD graphics card, yeah, Belkin USB hub, I think.
Yeah.
I completely missed that. I thought it cost a lot more. $600?
Yeah.
Wow. So I really want to mess around with this stuff.
Only developers can get it, though.
USB-C, uh-oh, right? For what it's worth.
I mean,
worth,
anybody in the developer
USB-C
program.
Connector, but I'm assuming it's actually Thunderbolt 3.
Yeah. For those curious, if you get a hold of High Sierra and you have a different box that uses Thunderbolt with an eGPU, it does support it.
Thunderbolt 3, right?
I think Thunderbolt 2, actually. You can poke around there. I think there might be an enabler script, but I haven't dug too much into it. But let's get back to iOS stuff. So first thing on the list,
iOS 11,
peer-to-peer Apple Pay support.
And they did pull off the it goes to 11 joke, Tim. Yeah. That was Tim, right?
He totally rocked the joke. That was an excellent delivery.
Yeah. I was hoping with the peer-to-peer Apple Pay that it would be one of those, like, you make your phones kiss to transfer the money. But
no.
You do it through messages.
If you want to kiss while you're transferring money, that's okay.
That's only allowable in certain counties.
Yeah.
new app store. So they've redone the app store.
Have you seen the new app
store?
That
was one of the most disappointing announcements, in my opinion.
It is kind
of
meh.
I have to disagree completely. That was a huge announcement. And I'm basing that on the reaction that I got when I was talking with developers at WWDC and AltConf. They were so excited about the new app store. They're okay. Loving the crap out of it.
Let me clarify. I think that it, and I'm going to guess, and I'd love to hear what they told you, Jeff, but I'm guessing what they're excited about is the ability to showcase their apps better in terms
of
information that they put in there.
Mm-hmm.
And where I'm concerned is it looks like they're taking the App Store in the same direction as they do Apple Music, where everything is highly curated by Apple themselves, which I think is concerning for the whole discovery problem. So they've done nothing to address really the discovery issue and given Apple more control over what's really going to be surfacing in the App Store.
So what I was seeing when I was sitting down with a group of developers was that searching actually works. So when you search for something, even if you've misspelled the name, there's a very high likelihood that what you're looking for is at the top of the list. So that's a huge improvement. And the thing with splitting stuff out into the different categories and having the highlighted stuff, so different app each day thing. There were a couple developers that were like, well, this is crap because if there's some crazy big news day, then my app gets lost in the noise. But the way they're doing that is it's a list. So your app is the top app on that list today. Tomorrow, my app is on the top of that list. It slides down. So you have like a whole week's worth of top highlighted apps. And just the general way apps are being presented, they were very pleased with how that was working. So, of course, there's always a possibility this could turn into something where it's just Apple's favorites and nothing else. But the way it was working when we were all playing with it a couple days ago, it was so much better. And
I'm a little more optimistic. With your information. Yeah. But
so time will tell. But based on what I saw, I was like, okay, Apple's getting it. This is worlds better. Of course, there's room for improvement, but it was night and day.
My one hope is that they apply some of their AI, deep learning, and other algorithms to it to personalize those recommendations. So in addition to the whole human curation thing, that there is some AI curation around the apps like that I own or use or like those sorts of things. I mean, Apple has data about the apps that I actually open and launch on my phone. Like all that stuff gets stored. So it'd be nice if they would data mine some of that and go, wow, he did download this app and this app and this app, but this one's not, none of these are installed on the phone. So we'll just throw those away. And these haven't been opened in 12 months. So we'll kind of lower weight that. And these five apps are used all the time. So
I don't know if it's that granular, but
right. I'm saying I want them to get to that point.
That would be cool. Yeah. One thing that I did see was that when you're looking at lists of apps and suggestions, if you've already got the app, it doesn't show up in the list.
Nice.
Yeah. And
they already do that, though, to a certain degree, I think.
Yeah, but this was markedly better.
Okay.
And it was very consistent. But if you go and do a search, it'll still show up.
Visually, it just looks just like Apple Music to me.
It does look a lot like Apple Music, but...
Which is fine. I'm okay with that. A singular visual style for all of their media purchasing applications is fine by me.
Yeah. And if this continues to progress
beyond what we were playing with, knowing that we were messing around with a very early beta of the new App Store, this has the potential to be really nice. Yeah. I'm very optimistic.
One thing I'm really excited about is the new settings for AirPods in iOS 11.
So
now you get discrete settings per pod. So you can, for double tapping, so you can set one to invoke Siri and the other to do like a play pause or a previous track. I have mine for play pause, and I've been enjoying it.
Previous or next? Or previous or next?
It's whichever one you want.
We don't have that now, right? Right now, it's play, pause, or Siri, correct?
Yeah, I don't think you have the previous next at all.
I believe previous next is new in iOS 11.
Yeah. So that's pretty awesome. And for what it's worth, so I'm not a maniac, not a crazy maniac. So I didn't put iOS 11 on my phone. I did put it on my iPad to try it. And thank God I only did that because, inevitably, every time this rolls out, I've got friends who text me 3 hours after the keynote saying, I'm rocking iOS 11 on all of my devices and my Apple Watch. And I'm like, you're insane. And they're like, no, it's rock solid, dude. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's not at all.
You cannot say that 2 hours beta. After the keynote that it's rock solid.
It's not rock solid. It's extremely
buggy. You got to give it a couple weeks before you can say it's rock solid.
It's super buggy. I gave it a couple minutes and it's not rock solid. But so
no, but that's okay because
totally fine.
It's beta one.
Yeah, it's developer beta one.
Yeah, so it's not even public.
I sacrificed beta. My iPad Mini to it, and it's running generally fine. But good God, some of the bugs that I'm encountering. It's pretty funny.
So
you're saying I shouldn't put it on my iPad Pro?
No, I think you should totally do it.
You should do it. You should try it.
Because it's not my iPad Pro.
Now, okay, so the reason I bring this up is...
I like my iPad Pro to work.
Okay,
well, so if like I like my work, iPad Pro to work, you're saying I shouldn't...
Don't correct. Put it on yet.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, I wouldn't put it on any serious production machine. Not yet.
My iPad Pro is not a production machine, but I like it to work generally.
Yeah, you then
like
don't it put it on.
Don't put it on.
I mean, it'll work, but it'll be really annoying because you're going to keep finding the...
Is it mostly like the crashing app thing from the Springboard, those sorts of things?
No, I haven't had that at all yet, surprisingly. But I'm getting weird stuff I'll get a redraw thing where I'm holding my iPad in portrait mode, and I'll tap on a field to bring up the keyboard, and the keyboard comes up in landscape mode, so it slides out of the right side of the screen.
Mine already does that now. What are you talking about?
Oh, well, guess what? Now it's a feature, apparently. It's a problem I haven't ever had before, so that one is new to me.
Oh, yeah, my iPad Pro, I'll have it. I had it one time where the keyboard kept sliding out from the top, no matter what orientation I put it in.
Yeah,
and I was trying to do a search, so it was like this comedy of in the search screen, tap on the search box, and then the keyboard would come down over top of the search box, so you couldn't see what you were.
Oh my God, that's horrible!
And it was upside down, but
yeah,
you should just.
But
switch
I could
to
type, the... and then once I typed in what I wanted to and hit go, it did do the search. But
I can't connect to my. iPhone hotspot at all.
Bummer.
Ooh, beta.
But that anyway, would be bad for me. Anyway, so if you're like me, you can make those settings, you can set up those settings on your AirPods on one device and they stick around on iOS 10 devices. So I got the fancy dual wielding AirPods on my iPhone and that's pretty fun. Let's see. You got ARKit now. It's a new part of iOS 11 for developers to make augmented reality apps and games.
Yeah, pretty cool.
We saw a really, really impressive demo during the keynote of a game where a landscape just kind of appeared on a tabletop and this game just unfolded. It looked like it was happening in real life. It was really cool. So this is going to make it so interacting with the environment is much easier for developers to implement. They showed examples of Pokemon Go. If you compare current versions to ARKit versions, where the Pokemon show up is much better. The surface detection alone is much better. Lighting effects, scaling effects, all that stuff that's kind of built into ARKit. So that's going to be really cool for developers.
It looks really good.
Speaking of iPad features, iPad got more of the love with this release. So you got drag and drop everywhere, drag and drop galore in this. And this is going to make...
including multi-select, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, drag and drop multi-select stuff. So, I've seen people do it, and my iPad just crashed while I was trying to do it. Rock solid my butt. You can grab multiple apps on the home screen and move them around. So no more of the juggling of apps to move it to the spot that you want. You can just, you tap and hold with one finger, and then you can grab with the other finger. You just tap on the ones you want to add to your little stack.
Collect under your static finger, and they just like slide in there.
Yeah, same deal with
a little magnet.
Yeah, with photos, grab them, and then files.
And in the new files app.
Yeah, you're jumping ahead, but yeah, there's a files app, which I don't fully understand still. I think it's kind of a rebranded iCloud.
The reason you don't understand it yet, and the reason it feels like just a new skin on the old iCloud Drive thing, is because none of the other services are in it yet.
Okay, so it will support services like...
Unless you're like me and you have documents from Real...
Yeah, so there were a few apps, of course. Of course, there were some apps that were Sherlocked on Monday, such as Documents by Real.
Not really.
I think so.
As
much as you think, I'm probably not going to use Documents.
That's okay. There are some people that will never use Documents. Again, the Readle app. But there's a lot of people that want all that extra functionality that comes along with Documents. And the Readle guys are looking at how they can leverage the new drag and drop features in iOS 11 in their own apps.
Yeah.
So it'll still be a very useful app for people that need more than what Apple is offering. To me, it's the same thing like Text Expander and 1Password. These are apps that everyone just assumed were going to be Sherlocked, and they're not. Right. But I just think we get more people that are using the features than we would have had before, and the people that need the power that they had sought out before the features existed, most of those people aren't going to switch.
It's interesting that you mentioned that they're looking into leveraging Apple's drag and drop technology in their apps, because was it last week? They announced the drag and drop for all of their apps, the Readle guys.
Yeah.
So they had just spent who knows how long building a whole drag and drop system that would work across their own apps. And then boom, Apple gives them a tool. I know why they're excited about it, because they're like, okay, now we can use something that's just built into the OS.
Sure.
But I mean, it kind of sucks that they had just finished launching a system that they built themselves that does basically the same thing.
Happens. Here's a funny thing. At least I think it's funny. I don't know if the Readle guys do. Look at the buttons for controlling what you're doing with a scan in Apple's new scanner feature. Mm-hmm. And look at the buttons in Readle's Scanner Pro app. Apple totally ripped off their buttons. I mean, it seriously, it looks like they went into the into the resources for the app and grabbed the graphics.
They didn't just buy Riedel and no one knows it yet, right?
No, Riedel's still their own thing. If Riedel has been bought, they did the most amazing job of lying to me. Which I suppose
is. I love the guys at Riedel, so I know they'll weather through this. But I'm kind of with Michael. I think Documents is going to lose a lot of users. Unfortunately, it's a great app and has been a great app for a long time. It's been one of my favorites. So yeah, it'll be interesting to compare. Unfortunately, I don't use a lot of the advanced features of Documents.
Okay, then you may very well switch over to just Apple's drag and drop, but other apps they have, I bet you'll keep using.
Oh, yeah. Spark is my email client for a long time now, I think.
You're a crazy person.
Why? Because I like Spark?
I don't know. I'm over Spark. I'm out on Spark just because, number one, all your email goes through their servers. I'm not cool with that. Number two, I got bit last year when they had an issue. And so I had to change my iCloud password twice. And I'm donezo with Spark. But anyway, so there's document scanning in the Notes app. Is that just the iPad?
No, I think it's on all devices.
Okay. On top of that, you can now mark up PDFs. Let me rephrase this. You can basically do a print to PDF of almost anything now.
Right.
Many things at the very least. So in Safari, for example, if you want to mark up the web page as a PDF, you just hit the little share thingy. You can do that. It's really awesome. We mentioned the drag and drop. You've got a QuickType keyboard on the iPad. That thing is cool. So now you've got alternate keys on pretty much all the keys. So now you don't have to switch over to different keyboards. You just kind of yoink down on it. So if I want to type a 5, I just yoink down on the T key. And it becomes a 5. So you don't have to.
That's not working consistently for me yet.
It's been perfect for me. But yeah, it's gonna. Oh,
there you go, beta. Sure.
Beta. One giant bummer of beta. Well, not beta really. It's just iOS 11. 32-bit apps no longer open.
I don't know if that's a giant bummer. It's a minor bummer.
Hell yes, it is a bummer.
Why?
It is an app. Bummer, because I have apps that I rely on that are never going to be rewritten.
Well, whose fault is that?
Not mine.
No, I'm not saying it's yours. Whose fault is it?
I suppose you could blame the developer.
There you go.
So this may be a situation where someone figures out how to do a really good jailbreak for iOS 11. And writes an emulator app that you can sideload your old 32-bit apps into, and they'll run in that.
Which is an app that you depend on that's 32-bit that the developer's not updating?
So I'm going to be taking Orbital Mechanics next quarter, uh-huh. And I have an app called Orbit Architect. Shout out to Skip. Basically, it just gives me sliders for all the parameters of an orbit, and I can just fiddle with an orbit and see exactly what's going on.
And there's no other app that does that?
Not that I've been able to find.
So here's an opportunity for a developer, right?
I guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're putting the call out right now. Yeah. Michael needs an Orbital Mechanics app with sliders so he can see in real time what his orbits are going to do.
Yeah.
That's 64-bit. Hop to it, developers. Can't wait to see what you come up with.
It probably wouldn't be that difficult. If I knew how to use Swift, I could probably make it.
Right. That's the thing. You know, the other thing to check is that developer, when he decided not to update it anymore, have you contacted the developer and asked him about it?
No, I haven't.
You should do that, for one. And then two, maybe you open source the code and you could just recompile it.
Fair.
Yeah.
Very possible. I'll do that.
And sideload it.
But anyway, that is a bummer. There's another app that I used called Air Video. There's a new version of Air Video. To be fair, that developer did update it, but I didn't update to that new version because I didn't like it.
Well, you're going to have to now.
I'm just putting it out there. Got to get the bad with the good.
Oh, yeah, but I'm saying I just don't see it as a major bummer. It is a minor bummer. It's going to be an inconvenience in some scenarios.
It's a bummer for me. But anyway.
Believe me, I have some apps that I love that are basically going to die.
Did we talk about the dock? So there's a new dock on iPad. So you can put...
The dock's pretty cool.
Was it 14 apps? Something like that. There's a contextual thingy on the right-hand side. I'm not sure why they moved it to the right, but it's on the right now. So it gives you recently opened apps as well as your continuity. Is that what that's called?
Yeah.
Your continuity apps.
You didn't. Yeah.
So that's nice.
The redesign of the app switcher, split screen, yes, notification center thing, or what, I don't know what you call it. Notification center and the app switcher are like in the same screen now.
Yeah, they are. I like
And it's more like on the iPad. If you have split screen apps, it'll remember and keep like the pairings that you like.
Yep.
Which I'm totally excited about, because I have a couple that it's such a pain in the butt to have to redo it every, and I do it every time. It's like, I want these two apps together. Safari it's usually my RSS reader and Omni Focus or Omni Outliner, excuse me.
Totally makes sense.
Cool. Yeah. Those persistent app combinations is there. You've got, so the gesture to get to the switcher is now the same. At least it is on the iPad to get to Control Center. You know, Control Center, my favorite thing about Control Center is that it's not a scrolling thing anymore. There's no more scrolling. So now your sliders don't get all jacked up when you're trying to scroll or vice versa. And it's customizable.
So you can
add and remove things that you want or don't want, such as, HomeKit stuff. There's a lot of 3D touch going on now where you can, you 3D touch on something and you get more information, or you just get like the bare minimum.
The only thing that's a bummer about that is, not for us, because we know what's going on, and not for the probably people listening to this podcast, but for like people like my wife, unless I go tell her about those features, and I will, but she's lucky she has me. There's a bunch of people out there that have no idea about 3D touch. And it even confuses some people sometimes, because they'll accidentally 3D touch on something and be like, why is it doing that?
I'm surprised.
I've never been a big fan of 3D touch because it does not have discoverability built into it. Like, there's no way to know when something has that extra feature hidden behind it.
I suppose that's true. But in my experience, I see people who are non-techies using it all the time. And I'm surprised by it for that reason.
Yeah, it's one of those language things, I guess. You know, it's like we didn't understand pinch to zoom for forever either, but now everybody kind of knows that. Like, it's probably just a thing that takes time. And maybe 3D touch is mature enough because we've had it for a few years now. I'm curious what happens with Control Center on older devices that don't have 3D touch.
Well, on my iPad, it's just touch and hold.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Because they don't always implement that, and that gets me frustrated sometimes.
Yeah, it seems like it's kind of...
For example, I hate that the touch and hold doesn't work for, you know, how you can clear all your notifications with 3D touch?
Oh, yeah.
You know, you click on the little close button and you 3D touch it, and then it gives you the close all.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't that be a touch and hold? But they never implemented it, so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
So there's a lot of good stuff in Control Center. You can.
You forgot one of the best ones.
What?
Now when you take a screenshot.
I was just going to say that. Go for it.
Oh, yeah. The screenshot thing. It goes down in the corner, and if you share it or send it out, it doesn't save it to your camera roll.
Yeah, it's an optional save. It's another step to save to your camera roll.
And you so can also tap it. And it opens up in the markup view.
The markup. Yeah, I'm going to be using that all the time. But I've already used it several times. I have to go through, because I also use Flickr Uploader. So I have to go through both my iCloud photo library and Flickr like every week or so and just take screenshots out, like delete screenshots. So to not have to do that, it's amazing.
That's pretty awesome. Have you had a chance to play with screen recording yet?
I messed with it just momentarily. But yeah, so that's something that's, you can now do screen recording without a computer. And it's accessed right from the control center.
Yeah.
Is that something that has to be enabled, or is it enabled by default?
I think you have to turn
it. You have to go and add the little widget to the the platters. So yeah, so just go into preferences and you can do it.
Cool. The only other thing, and I don't know if it was maybe in that list. I haven't gone through that, you know, the slide that's like, and all these other features. Have they added remote desktop support?
How do you mean?
iOS?
What do you
mean? Remote control. Like screens access.
Remote control of other computers?
Yeah.
No.
Other iOS devices?
No.
So can I log into my mom's iPad from my iMac and like help her with tech problems?
Nope, I don't think so.
Because Apple has that ability internally, if you've ever done it. Have you ever gone, do you know the Apple on a support call, they can like take control of your phone or your iPad?
They can look at the actual screen?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And control it, not just look at it, actually control it. Like a little cursor comes up and they'll like click through things.
Huh.
Yeah, and it'll do this little kind of flash thing where they're tapping and stuff so you can tell what they're doing.
Yeah, so I'm hoping Apple takes that public at some point.
That'd be nice. Because
a lot of people like myself could use that for helping friends and family members remote troubleshoot their iOS devices.
What else do you got? You can ask Siri to translate something for you. You know, how do you say something in another language? You can, there's a new Siri voice. There are two new Siri voices that sound really good. I haven't been able to get them to work in this beta. There are indoor maps in the Maps app. So it's, you know, fairly limited at this point, but it's something that Apple's trying to do. So you got malls and airports in there, so that's pretty cool.
Where's our street view, by the way? I was hoping that would make an appearance this time around.
Apparently not yet.
Yeah.
Apple's been driving those cars around for a while now.
Maybe they're just doing their own version of diners, drive-ins, and dives.
No, you know, you can go on their website and you can like see where the car is going to be. Like they have a thing that says, yeah, we're in this area from these times. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. You've been driving them around for, I think, about a year now, capturing images and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Nope, doesn't seem to be in there. One-handed mode for lefties or righties for your keyboard.
I'm excited about Do Not Disturb While Driving.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not responsible, so.
Yeah, just so you know, I can't find that setting on the iPad. So I'm assuming that means that they
iPhone only.
Not like I expected to see it, but just for clarification for people, if you're looking for it on an iPad, I haven't found it.
I doubt it is there.
I think there's too many people that use iPads while driving.
But, you know, there's definitely that guy. There's also, I like this, you can offload apps. So you can enable an automatic offload of apps, or you can do it manually on an app by app basis.
And I need this.
And the best part of it is that I don't use. It doesn't delete the app data.
Right.
It just deletes the app itself, and you get to keep the app data.
Is there a threshold for that you can like set or control? That's what I was just wondering. I mean, they didn't talk about it in the demo, but like, you know, I know it's like if you haven't used it, you set a threshold for like when you want it to delete an app. Like, I haven't opened this app in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days?
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
But I'd like to see it actually, you know, do like just a prompting. Hey, I just removed this app. Do you want me to also remove the data? You know what I mean? It'd be nice if it would just notify you, hey, I just remove this app because you haven't been using it. Do you want to also remove the data? Because I have a feeling a lot of people would. Like, I know for a lot of those apps, I'd be like, yeah, I totally forgot about that app. Just get it off of here. So I understand the philosophy, you know, because it's auto-deleting. They want to, oops, I didn't want to delete that app. You put the app back on and all your data's still there. Good, you're saved. You know, no problem. But I wouldn't mind if it had an option to like prompt me to just say, hey, I'm removed this app. Would you like me to almost also remove the data?
Yeah, that would be cool.
For what it's worth, I just checked the box and now I can't de-check the box.
Awesome.
Nice. Is that the kind of thing like how they did it with the Mac? For a lot of those new like features, hey, do you want to? Because like in About My Mac, I think in About My Mac, right, you can go into the storage section now, and you can like manage and turn on the whole desktop sync thing. But once it's on, you can't turn it off from inside that control panel. You actually have to go into the system preferences. Like, so you have to go to another part of the operating system. Maybe it's something that like that. That
makes sense.
That seems a little shitty. Well, it doesn't make sense, but...
Yeah, it doesn't make sense at all, but it doesn't. Apple did. So I wouldn't put it past them that they did it there, too.
Oh, so it's in the... I see, because... I think the offload unused apps, there are two different spots for the setting, and in the one spot you can only turn it on.
Right. Yep. So they did the same. That's the same thing that they did on the Mac.
That's insane. Okay. So you can turn it off in the iTunes and App Store pane. Great. Yeah. So I'm sitting here thinking, oh my God, what's, you know, in moments they're going to delete the games that I only play on an airplane, and I'm going to get on an airplane and they're not going to be there.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that would suck.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, another game that doesn't work anymore is Cannibalt. Because it needs to be updated for iOS 11.
Oh, hey. So, you guys have played by that setting. So that doesn't have a setting to, like, whitelist certain apps from that purging.
Peggle Classic. The image? There are all kinds of apps I can't play anymore. I'm actually kind of really upset about this.
I forgot about Peggle. Now I'm kind of sad.
Yeah. You should be sad.
Did you hear my question about the app purging thing, though?
You can't. You can do it manually, though. You can do it app by app. There's QR code scanning in the camera, so that's cool. And I think that's all that I wanted to talk about with iOS 11. There's the HomePod.
Woohoo!
So you got a big old woofer and 7 beamforming tweeters, It's got an array of, I think, 6 different microphones to not only detect commands with loud music in the room, but it also optimizes the audio playback. So it listens to itself and says, hey, this is what I want to do. And it changes the
spatial awareness
configuration of the speakers. And it's a Siri pod with dope speakers, and it can play Apple Music and basically do all the Siri stuff that you want it to do. And it's not coming out until when?
Later this year.
December. Okay. Are you excited about the HomePod? It's $400.
I am.
$400. $400.
$350.
Okay. People say it sounds great. I'm sure it does.
Yeah. I mean, I have Sonos, and I'm interested to get one just to compare and test it out.
Yeah.
You know, I've always been interested in Sonos and just never got around to doing any Sonos stuff. Now I'm going to wait because I want to hear the HomePod.
Yeah, the only thing is, again, a big question I have, and I haven't seen any information on this, is Apple did talk about being able to pair 2 of them.
Mm-hmm.
But can you pair more than 2? Like if you want to do surround sound?
No. Well, so you can pair more speakers into the system, but no. The surround sound thing, no.
So you can set up 2 as a pair, and then you can maybe have another one in another room.
Yeah.
And to be clear, there's also a new version of AirPlay 2, which is going to bring, basically it's going to bring back multi-speaker selection in iOS.
Yeah. Adam, you may want to listen to the Friday morning Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast. I had Dave on, and we spent the whole show talking about everything we know about HomePod.
Excellent. I will go check
so
that out.
So my guess is other questions that you have, we may have answered.
Yeah. I mean, my Sonos system is my surround sound system. So I have the play bar and the woofer and 2 play ones as rear channels. So I don't think the HomePod will be additive, not a replacement.
And it may be that way for a lot of people. Not a replacement.
What?
It is absolutely not a replacement. Not yet.
Yeah. The nice thing, Michael, about the AirPlay 2 thing is that's going to enable your Apple TV to actually just play through your speakers if you have speakers connected to your Apple TV.
Yeah. Did I mention that?
You can't do right now, which always bugged me.
Music, not video.
Right. Yeah. What? So the point is I don't have to have my TV on to play. Like right now, if I want to use the music app on my Apple TV, I have to turn on my TV and play everything that way.
You can't bump out. You can't blast your videos through the HomePod on the Apple TV.
Nope.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I'll put a link to
not the HomePod. This is an AirPlay 2 thing.
You can't AirPlay 2.
No, it sounds like the problem right now is getting the latency issues worked out between all the devices. You can't plug Ethernet into any of these into these speakers. So their whole connection with everything is just Wi-Fi.
So yeah, there's no Bluetooth too. People need to know that these are not Bluetooth speakers.
Right. Yeah, so there's a lot that has to happen behind the scenes to match up audio between multiple speakers and then throw in video and so doing something where you have the audio between a couple speakers matching up close enough so that your ears can't hear the latency issue, that's one thing. But when you throw in your eyes as well, so what I'm hoping is that something Apple is going to address in the future, and it's the kind of thing they can do with a software update, so you wouldn't have to buy new speakers. They could just one day say, hey, here's this update, and now your Apple TV and your HomePods become your whole home entertainment system.
Cool. And I will add a link to the big HomePod FAQ show. the
awesome
the TMO daily observations for anybody looking for that. So, and HomePod can do a bunch of other like news things. Like Siri can do stuff for you. So it's basically a big, it's a Siri pod. New iPads. There's so much stuff.
One thing I was wondering about that is, does that mean Siri is now going to be more vocal about exposing information?
From what I understand, the Siri capabilities that we're going to have on the HomePod are going to be a subset of Siri features. So it's not so much a thing where you're accessing your whole schedule and making shopping lists and stuff like that.
It's going to be primarily music.
This is a music device
that has voice control. Specific things.
Yeah,
but I mean, they mentioned having commands like asking Siri about the news and stuff like that. So is she going to read back the news, or is she going to be
she'll read back your news.
Let me send a link to your iPhone.
What's the news today?
From what I understand, she will read back your news.
Okay, good. That's the kind of thing that I mean. And that should really be extended to the iPhone. If that ends up being a HomePod only thing, then Apple's screwing up again.
Yeah, I just asked.
Have you heard the new Siri voice? Or some of them?
Yeah.
It sounds
great.
Can you play it? Yeah. I don't have it. It's not working on my iPad. Can you do it on yours, Jeff?
Yeah, hold on.
The new voice is incredible.
Let's see. Hey, Siri, what's the weather? It's a beta. What's the weather?
Here's the weather today.
Oh, I need her to tell us something that's more than just that. What should I ask?
Ask her a Wikipedia thing and then she can read it.
How should I phrase it so we get a good answer?
Who is Winston Churchill?
All right, we'll do that. Who is Winston Churchill?
All right, here's what I got.
Great. Ask her.
Immediately.
You might have to tell her to search Wikipedia for Winston Churchill.
Search Wikipedia for Winston Churchill.
Here's some information.
Yep. Yeah, that's great. So,
well, at least you got a little bit of her voice.
Yeah. Why won't she? I usually get the prompt where she'll ask me if.
I'll have her tell us a joke. Tell me a joke.
The past, present, and future walk into a bar. It was tense.
That was great. Okay, it's a good Siri demo. Thank you.
Oh, man. Beta. Everyone remember, this is beta. So
watch the keynote. It has a really good demonstration.
It does. But the audio, the new voice, I do like the new voices.
They're good. They're very good.
Yeah, they are good.
So new iPads, we didn't even talk about that. So new hardware, new iOS hardware. It's pretty much what we were expecting. So we got a performance update for the 12.9-inch iPad Pro, and we got the new 10.5-inch iPad Pro, which, correct me if I'm wrong, does that replace the 9.7?
I believe it replaces the 9.7-inch iPad Pro. It sure looks that way. So,
So
now 9.7-inch will be iPad, and that's it.
Okay. So it's got thinner bezels. It has the same resolution as the bigger iPad. It's got an A10X 6-core Fusion CPU, 12-core GPU, 40% faster graphics performance. It is $649 for the 64 gig. And I guess the big thing is the improvement in the latency of the screen drawing.
Refresh rate.
Yeah, the refresh rate.
Yeah.
It's a 20 millisecond. It's pretty epic. So it's going to be great for
120 hertz.
Doing your
instead of 60.
Yes.
Yeah.
Double the refresh rate.
Yeah. Now, one thing that they didn't talk about in the keynote, but Craig Federighi talked about during Talk Show Live with, you know, John Gruber's show that he does every year in the evening at WWDC. Federighi was talking about the software that that they've written to interact with Apple Pencil. They can do resolution upgrades on Apple Pencil on the iPad. That's where it actually happens. So they increased Apple Pencil's resolution, and they never have to do anything to the pencil itself. It's just built into the operating system. And while a lot of people would be like, okay, when he said that, I was like, holy crap, this is fracking amazing. It means that if you have one of the new iPads running iOS 11, you just got an Apple Pencil upgrade, and a really nice Apple Pencil upgrade.
That's really cool. I'm not sure I fully understand it, but
it's okay. Just know you should be really excited about this.
Is it
going to be no latency basically in your Apple Pencil?
Right. And when you're drawing shapes, the pencil follows what you're doing more accurately, which is crazy because it's already really accurate. But it's even more accurate. And the reason being is because they can increase the sampling rate on the iPad.
Okay.
So on the iPad Pro line, the Apple Pencil resolution has been doubled.
Awesome.
Yes.
Okay. So we talked about tvOS here and there. There will be a public beta made available for the first
time. Wait, they're doing a public beta of tvOS?
Yes.
Really? I totally missed that.
Yep. And did I mention that AirPod auto pairing is coming to tvOS? It's worth repeating if I did already say it.
No, I don't think you did.
Okay, so
that's pretty cool.
Now it's going to go through your iCloud, and you can just pull it up through your speaker list without having to repair, and that's really cool. Apple has also opened up HomeKit, so now developers do not need to get an MFI license to test out HomeKit, and Apple's actually encouraging developers to prototype their stuff using Arduinos and Raspberry Pis. Of course, you'll still need an official MFI license to market something, to sell it. But people like me who do Raspberry Pi projects using HomeKit, it's going to open that up. And there have been Raspberry Pi HomeKit projects that have been basically shut down by Apple. They say, you can't do that. So now that's going to open things up. It's going to make it much nicer. Totally looking
forward to
that.
Surprised they never shut down Homebridge.
I'm surprised. Yeah, I was trying to look around, and I don't know what exact project has been shut down, but now it's encouraged, which is great. Apple has also said that they are opening up the NFC chip to developers, and it's not as cool as it seems on its surface, because it is only it's a read-only ability. So you can read NFC tags. It's called Core NFC. So you can't interact. You can't send data to an NFC receiver.
What more would you need to do than an NFC tag other than read it?
I'm not talking about just NFC tags.
No.
I'm saying if I had an NFC receiver, perhaps on an Arduino, and I wanted to, make a door lock. Can't do that.
Hmm.
Yeah, kind of a bummer.
All right,
but
that's a start.
But it's opening it up to developers, and I think I'm going to guess that a lot of this has to do with their Apple Pay endeavors. They don't want to open that up to... they probably don't want to open that up still for the next couple of years because they want to get more banks on board for Apple Pay. Just imagine if they opened up the NFC chip for anybody right now. You'd have 30 different banks with all their different apps and all their different ways of doing it and compatibility issues. I think that's playing a huge part of this. But I'm hoping that soon, I mean, there's a lot of uses for NFC, you know, key cards, that sort of thing. That's one big deal. You know, hopefully with an updated version of Core NFC, they'd be able to do that. But it's a step in the right direction, so that's very cool. And oh, I like this one. iOS 11 lets you get more control over the location services. So now the allow location access while using the app setting is available for every app that requests location services.
Ah.
And I always wondered why it was like that. So it was up to the developer before. Now it's up to you. And I'm happy.
All right, I like that.
I'm happy about that. So that's very good. What else do we have? Oh, and then iOS 11 requires developers to use Apple's new in-app rating API. And you can turn that off if you want. So it, for those who don't remember, it requires that. So number one, all new apps going to the App Store cannot request it using their own third-party method. They have to use the Apple API if they want to do that. They can't
pop up. I mean, just to clarify, because that sounded a little confusing, means that they can't. You won't be getting those pop-ups from anything other than Apple's API that say, hey, please rate our app.
Right.
Those sorts of things.
Yep.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Well, and especially because like Michael said, with the Apple one, you can say, I don't want to see these.
Right.
As a setting, and then they won't pop up at all.
This makes me very happy.
Yeah, and they will only be able to bug you about it up to 3 times per year. I think the biggest benefit, honestly, is if you truly do want to, you know, very quickly give a star rating to some app that you enjoy, now you don't have to jump out of the app to do so. You do it with this within this little dialogue. You do your star app rating, and then
and reviews. Okay. I think too. You can give it a review.
Yep. And once you do it, they're never able to ask you again. So
that's awesome.
Were there apps that were asking for multiple reviews? Like,
kidding me?
Please review us again.
You kidding me? Of course.
Yeah, it was like they didn't have a flag set or something to say, okay, we got a response. Don't show this anymore. It would just show.
Yeah. Nice. Yep. Okay. That was a lot of stuff, guys. I assume there's nothing else you wanted to talk about. Let's just run through some picks real quick and get out of here. Because that was
all right.
So, Jeff, you go first.
All right. So, I know I can pick like so many different things from WWDC announcements, but that would be too easy. So instead, I'm picking Monument 2.
Oh,
it's really, really nice. It was one of the apps that they just happened to show on screen during the keynote, like, you know, like in the App Store thing. And so it was available on Monday, $5. Is that right? Is it a $4.99 app? I think that's what it is. And it's awesome. So, you know, the original Monument Valley, you have the little girl that's a princess. And you have to lead her through these M.C. Escher style puzzles to find her way out. And then I guess she eventually saves her people because she gets through the puzzles. This version, she's grown up and she has her own little girl, and they go through all the puzzles together. And you know, so you have to lead the daughter with the mother, and sometimes they can't be together. So you have to lead the mother around to get the daughter to try and get back to her so that they can complete the puzzle. And it's really well done. And adding the two characters that have to work in tandem makes for a really nice, interesting change to the gameplay. Otherwise, it would be just like, here's more levels. So it's really cool how they set this up. I'm very pleased with the game.
Cool. And that is $4.99.
Awesome. Totally worth it.
Adam, what is your pick?
So I am picking a note app, and actually a note app that won an Apple Design Award at Worldwide Developer Conference this year. It's an app called Bear. Bear-writer.com is the website. It's available for Mac and iOS. And what's the big deal here is I've been a person, I do almost all my writing now in Markdown. This is not necessarily a Markdown app per se, because it takes some of the features of Markdown and then expands upon it. So they have kind of a simplified version of Markdown in it, although I am appreciative that when I first installed the app, it has a Markdown compatibility mode, so you can force it into regular Markdown, which I did because I'm going to continue to use Markdown. So you can use Markdown in it, but it's not Markdown native, I guess is what I'm trying to say, because it takes more of like a library approach to your notes. So everything goes into kind of the Bear library format, kind of like your photos in the Photos app. And then all your notes can be categorized and organized using hashtags. So you just put hashtags anywhere in your note, and those will automatically show up in the sidebar of the application as categories. And then you can even do a slash and then within the hashtag and then another category to do like subcategories and subfolders. So you get some organization built in there. And then because it's its own format, you can also do things like it has Apple Pencil support. And so you can inline drawings. If you put addresses in there, it will link to maps. It does emails. I mean, it just does all kinds of great sort of extra features. And if you get the pro version, it still supports exporting back out into Markdown, JPEG, PDF, Word document, rich text format, I think, all of those sorts, HTML.
So does it sync that between devices?
Yes. Have to buy the pro. You have to buy the pro version.
Okay. That seems like a reasonable pro feature.
It is a subscription, but it's $15 a year or $1.49 a month. So
that's not bad.
You can use it completely free, and you get all the features. What you're missing is syncing, themes, and exporting are the things that are reserved for pro features. So if you just want a really cool note-taking application and you don't care about syncing and stuff like that, this works great for that. It has a focus mode. I have been a huge fan of ByWord. It has been my Markdown text editor of choice. I imported everything into Bear, and I'm trying it out, and I think I'm probably going to stick with it. I was a little bummed that it doesn't, you know, that it kind of takes that library format, but I kind of get it. It does all the syncing through iCloud, and as a matter of fact, there's no save because it does auto-syncing of everything. So, you know, the minute you put something in it, it's just auto-saved and then auto-synced.
Nice.
Yep. And it has really good previewing. And then on the Mac, the big bonus for me was it integrates directly with Marked. So again, if you're a Markdown fan, you probably know Marked, Brett Terpstra's application that does previewing of Markdown documents and previewing and exporting among other things. It has a really nice info panel too that does word count, character count, read times, paragraphs, all those sorts of things, and it's got a handy little shortcuts, And I just like the formatting. It's really beautiful how it auto formats everything. So I can write in Markdown as opposed to having to go into a preview mode to actually see the formatted Markdown. It just automatically inline kind of formats everything and does it in a really nice manner. And then the last bonus in this thing, like I said, advanced features for me being a developer, it supports code, and you can put code in there with code highlighting for 20 different programming languages.
That's really cool.
So I can put now my code snippets and stuff in there that I find online. And I was just noticing, I think there's some Safari plugins and some other things to like put data into it as well that I haven't delved into. I've only been using it for a couple days now, but I am super, super impressed. And I think this is going to be my new text editor note taking app of choice.
Cool.
So it's called Bear. It's free, or $1.49 a month, or $15 a year if you want the pro upgrade.
Nice. So Bear Writer on the App Store. So so my pick is an app called Streaks. I think a lot of people have heard about it. It was popular for a bit. But I recently, I was going to say it was free. It's not free, but I decided that I wanted to, work on some habits, and I was for a bit using the Reminders app, but it's a, like, do this thing every day. Then I was getting a reminder every day, and it was recreating, and it just got really annoying. And I thought,
yeah, reoccurring like to-dos or reminders like that are a pain in the butt.
Yeah. So Streaks is totally great for that. You know, the examples they use are, you know, you can actually do stuff that uses the health API. So you got, you know, walk or run, do a cycle, work out, yada, yada. A lot of the examples they use are, you know, eat a healthy meal, read for 10 minutes, walk the dog, brush your teeth, blah, blah, blah. And you can say how often you want to do that. So you can do once per day, twice per day, etc. And basically the idea is motivate yourself by building up a streak and keep it going. And there is compatibility with the iPhone and the Apple Watch. And
do you get punished if you break your streak?
I don't think so. I think it's, you know, you have to be an adult about it and just say, oh, that was stupid. Pretty much.
But I'm assuming it reports like your longest streak too. So if you break it, will it reset and then be like, okay, I got to try and beat. I did that 27 days in a row. I'm going for 40 this time.
Yep. Totally. It does do
nice.
That.
Nice.
Yeah. So Streaks, it's great for, you know, getting stuff handled, and I like it so far. It's $4. Check it out. You can find all the picks and the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show in iTunes. Tell a friend. Give us some stars. You can send your feedback to feedback@theiosshow.com. We appreciate all your feedback there. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the Mattcast, mattcast.com, and at Mattcast on Twitter. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, the Timo Daily Observations podcast, and at Jay Gamet on Twitter. Thanks, guys, for being here as always, and especially thanks to Jeff for turning off his AC. I'm feeling like a little stuffy because I don't have the window open, but I can only imagine what it's like right now for you.
It's really warm.
Thank you.
Sure thing.
I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter, and with that, we'll see you next time on The iOS Show.
An iPod, an iPod, an iPod, an iPod, an iPod, a phone, a phone, a phone, an iPod, an iPod, an iPod, an iPod, a phone, a phone, a phone, and an internet, and an internet, internet. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.
to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck, yuck. Yuck, yuck, no. Yuck, 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 no. Yuck, no. Yuck, yuck, no. You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers. Our fingers. Our fingers. Our fingers. Our fingers. Yuck. Our fingers. Fingers. Yuck. Communicator. An iPod. A phone. Are you getting it? An iPod. A phone. An iPod. A phone. An internet communicator.